the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pearl White system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 7th of October 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, the first news story that I've got for us today was dropped into the chat room over the weekend by Fielding Mellish, and I'm pretty surprised that this was actually a mainstream news story. Because it concerns someone who is anti-Christian. So I guess that's the reason why it was national news, or international news, in fact, because it was dropped into the chat room by an American member of the chat room, and yet it was from a British news site, the Daily Express. But I wouldn't have thought that the person concerned was that big of an author to actually get into the mainstream news. The author in question is Joseph Atwill. Now, I've heard him, I believe I've heard him before doing a debate with Eli James a long while back, but sometimes I have seen people on Gab and in comment sections referencing Joseph Atwill's work. And his basic theory is that Jesus Christ was a hoax, and the New Testament was written by Flavius Josephus. I mean, it's a ludicrous theory that doesn't really stand up to scrutiny. And Joseph Atwill himself has failed to do the first thing that anybody should do when they're studying this stuff, is to determine what ethnicity the Jews were. You have to determine just what actually made up the Jewish people at the time that the New Testament was written, so that you can differentiate between the Jews and the Israelites, basically. So he fails to do that. He fails to determine what ethnicity they were. Just assumes that they're the same as that all the inhabitants of Judea were the same as the people that are calling themselves Jews today, and that just is not correct, as we know. Flavius Josephus tells us that the Edomites, who were also called the Edomians, who were Canaanites, became absorbed into the Judean population about 200 years before Christ. And once they had become absorbed by the Judean population, they gradually made their way to the top. King Herod was one of these Canaanites, and he put in position other Canaanites as heads of the Pharisees, heads of the Sadducees. He put them in place as the high priest. So basically what we see there is we see these Canaanites taking over the entire aristocracy of Judea. Very similar to what's going on today, in actual fact. So it's no coincidence, in fact, that the same thing has gone on today throughout Europe. And Joseph Atwill fails to identify that in the first place, which really, you know, so many people do this. They start with a faulty premise. They start with the faulty premise that the Jews are the same people back then as they are today. The Judeans were the same people back then as they are today. They assume that the Jews were the Israelites, basically, which is not what history tells us. Let's get into this article here. Christianity is a baseless religion that was designed by the Roman Empire to justify slavery and pacify the citizens, according to controversial biblical scholar Joseph Atwill. Well, what does he mean by justify slavery? I mean, at the time, that was the same as employment is today. You would sell yourself for a certain amount of time in order to pay back debts. You would sell yourself for a certain amount of time in order to earn a trade. Yes, there were slaves that were taken in war, but that's pretty much irrelevant. I mean, if somebody's taken in war, what does he mean by the New Testament justifies slavery? And the New Testament says that slaves should love their masters, and it says that masters should treat their slaves well. And it's the same as today. Employers should treat their workers well, and the workers should seek to benefit their employer. And in an ideal situation, the employer would remunerate the worker with what his work deserved, and the worker would naturally want to please their employer because their employer was the source of good things, basically. The means to acquire whatever it is that the person needs to acquire. Pacify the citizens. And he assumes here that Christianity was meant for the Jews, because the Jews, these Canaanites, basically revolted and had a revolution, and he thinks that Christianity was there to stop the Jews from having their revolutions, which quite clearly it didn't do, because the last 2,000 years have been full of Jewish revolutions. Dr. E. Michael Jones has catalogued them all in his book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History. The people that became Christians were Benjamites. They were the tribe of Benjamin. They weren't Jews. Jesus Christ called the Jews devils. And the one Jew that there was among his disciples, which was Judas Iscariot, which actually means the Jew Iscariot, Jesus called a devil. So the Jews themselves were separate from the people that became Christians. The people that became Christians were the 12 tribes scattered abroad, like it says in the Epistle of St. James, I believe it is. It's addressed to the 12 tribes that were scattered abroad. St. Paul makes it clear that the Jews are seeking to persecute him and the Christians for believing in the promises made to their fathers. So there is a different, we need to differentiate between the Jews and the Israelites, the tribes of Israel. The tribes of Israel became Christian, and the Jews came up with their Talmud and defined themselves as being antichrists, basically. Christianity did not pacify the citizens, if he's claiming here that it was intended to pacify the Jews. The Jews were excluded entirely from it. In a blog on his website, Mr. Atwill wrote, "Christianity may be considered a religion, but it was actually developed and used as a system of mind control to produce slaves that believe God decreed their slavery." Well, no, you need to work in order to provide a living for yourself. That was the point of slavery. These slave masters looked after their slaves. They provided shelter for them. They provided food for them. They provided health care for them, a pension for them in their old age. And slavery itself would last for, you could sell yourself for 7 years, basically, 6 or 7 years, and then you would be freed. And a lot of the time you would be allowed to keep your property. And on festivals such as Saturnalia, the masters and the slaves would reverse their roles, and the slave would get to act as a master for the day, and the master would get to act as a slave for a day. And the very fact that they had that tradition shows you that they can't have mistreated these slaves. I mean, if they had mistreated these slaves when the slave was the master for the day, he could mistreat the master. The scholar argues that at the time, Jewish sects in Palestine were awaiting a warrior messiah, which became an increasing problem after the Roman Empire failed to deal with the problem with traditional means. Basically, you had different sects of Judeans. You had Pharisees, you had Sadducees, and you had Essenes. The Essenes were the equivalent of ethno-nationalists. They kept to the Old Testament laws, particularly the strict racial purity laws. And because of that, they separated themselves from the rest of the population in Jerusalem, and they had their monastery at Qumran, where they kept to strict Old Testament Hebrew law. The Pharisees and the Sadducees went along with this idea that you could proselytize and you could accept other races and mixed races into this into the religion that we can call Judaism, I guess, proto-Judaism. It was actually the Hebrew religion. You could say you have proto-Judaism and you have Talmudic Judaism, I guess. And the Pharisees and the Sadducees were this proto-Judaism. And by that time, teachings from the Talmud had already entered into the religion. And that side of the religion was the side that these Canaanites followed. I mean, they may have been, well, have been waiting for a warrior messiah. Not necessarily that the Essenes or the Benjaminites or the true Israelites were awaiting a warrior messiah. They were awaiting the fulfillment of the prophecies in the Old Testament, which came true in Jesus Christ. And you had all these prophecies in Daniel, which literally went down to the exact date when Christ was born. So they were waiting for this special person to be born at that time because of all these prophecies from the book of Daniel from 400 years before that had all come true. As a result, the rulers resorted to psychological warfare, which would appear to give the citizens what they wanted while at the same time making sure they followed their rules. So what he's talking about here, the Roman rulers resorted to psychological warfare. So what he's saying is that the Romans were behind Christianity. Well, the Romans were the greatest persecutors of Christianity, and the persecution was done at the instigation of the Jews. Nero's mistress was a Jewess. The Jews themselves set up writing what became known as the Gnostic Gospels, which was just deliberate subversion of Christianity. Similar to what goes on today with all the fake news that is out there, giving distorted reports of events. Well, that was the same thing with the Gnostic Gospels. You had distorted interpretations of Jesus's actions and distorted teachings, basically to subvert this religion. And Rome was encouraging them. I mean, they were in Alexandria. It was these Jews in Alexandria that were doing that. Mr. Atwill added, they surmised that the way to stop the spread of zealous Jewish missionary activity was to create a competing belief system. And that's when the peaceful Messiah story was invented. So what is he talking about here? Is he talking about Jews going out into the Roman Empire to try and convert people, so that's why they came up with Christianity? Well, because Christianity was persecuted by the Roman Empire straight away, I might add, after the resurrection, the disciples left the Roman Empire. The disciples went to places like Britain and Gaul, which is why the first nation to proclaim themselves Christian were the Britons. In about 150 AD, we have records of Joseph of Arimathea coming to Britain after first going to Gaul. Because it was being persecuted in the Roman Empire, the apostles and the disciples, they needed to get out of the Roman Empire and get somewhere where it wasn't illegal. And obviously, it wasn't illegal in Britain. I mean, in Britain and in Gaul, they had Druidry there, which was banned throughout the Roman Empire, but was allowed in Britain. And Druidry itself had a lot in common with the teachings of Christianity. So it doesn't make sense that he says here that it was to curb Jewish missionary activity I mean, the Christians weren't Jews. The Christians were Israelites. In the main, they were the tribe of Benjamin. I mean, the whole of Jesus's disciples were the tribe of Benjamin. Galilee, where they came from, is called Galilee of the Goyim, or Galilee of the Gentiles. And it tells us in the Old Testament, either in Ezra or Nehemiah, that all the people that inhabited that area were from the tribe of Benjamin. You know, the National Socialists actually went to that area, and they exhumed bodies and pronounced them Aryan. They pronounced them Aryan because the Benjaminites were Aryan. The what we could call the Jews, the Judeans, these mixed breed of Canaanites and the tribe of Judah, they were Arabs. They looked like Arabs. Continuing here, instead of inspiring warfare, this Messiah urged turn-the-other-cheek pacifism and encouraged Jews to give unto Caesar and pay their taxes to Rome. It didn't encourage Jews to do anything at all. It called Jews devils and the synagogue of Satan and the Antichrist. And Jesus Christ didn't try to convert the Jews, did he? He said, you can try to do these things. He was basically mocking them because he knew that he couldn't. And he said that they couldn't hear him. He said, the Jews cannot hear what I say. They don't have ears to hear what I'm saying because their father is the devil. We have a different father. So, and he also said, he's not come to them. He's only come to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So there was no encouraging the Jews to give unto Caesar and pay their taxes to Rome. And talking about turn the other cheek pacifism, turn the other cheek comes from the Sermon on the Mount, and I did a three-part series on this with Florian Geyer. That Sermon on the Mount wasn't given to everybody. That was only given to his close circle of disciples, and it was the way that they should be treating one another. It wasn't the way that they should be treating everybody else. It was just the way they should be treating one another. And where it talks about love your neighbor as yourself, Jesus Christ is quoting from the Old Testament. And the second part of that verse makes it clear that it is talking about the children of your people. It's not talking about everybody else. It's not pacifism. It's not saying turn the other cheek to the Muslim invader. It's saying you need to turn the other cheek to your own people because they are your extended kin. It's just basic nationalism that's being preached there. Although Christianity can be a comfort to some, it can also be very damaging and repressive, an insidious form of mind control that has led to the blind acceptance of serfdom, poverty, and war throughout history. Well, I would say it is damaging today. It is damaging because it's been corrupted and subverted, but it promotes hierarchy. And the hierarchy is what we see in nature. It doesn't promote equality. I mean, what is he saying here? On the one hand, he is saying, oh, it preaches turn the other cheek pacifism. So he's saying, oh, well, it preaches equality. And then in the next quote, he's saying, oh, it leads to blind acceptance of serfdom and poverty. Well, that's hierarchy, isn't it? That's the class system. Either it's preaching equality or it's preaching the class system, but you can't say that it's preaching both of them. And when we had the system, the serfdom system, the aristocrats were obliged to give charity to the poor. And they were obliged to see the poor as being a good thing, because if they weren't there, there would be no chance for the aristocrats to engage in the virtuous action that is giving charity. So you needed to have the rich there so that there could be the virtue of charity, so that they could give. And you needed the poor there, again, so that you could have this virtue of charity, so that they might receive, so that they might ask for mercy and receive mercy. And you could say, well, yes, there has been war, but not throughout history. Christianity stopped more wars than it began, because once you had, originally you had warring tribes in Europe, you had Vikings, you had Saxons, you had Celts, Gauls, all sort of all warring amongst one another. But once they had become Christian, then there was a basis to say, well, we are following the same religion as you, and we shouldn't be warring together. And once that was accepted, you had the possibility to build Christendom, which is the basis of everything that we had in Europe. Now, there is an argument to be made, well, Christendom would have come about anyway once we had enough white people in Europe, the same as civilizations came up in the Middle East and elsewhere once there was, when there was enough white people there to build it. But I do think that the teachings of Christianity also helped in order to form alliances between these people. I mean, Christendom wasn't like the Roman Empire. It wasn't one group ruling over everybody else. It was a commonwealth, which had never come about before in history that I know of. Mr. Atwill even goes so far to say that to this day, especially in the United States, it is used to create support for war in the Middle East. And yes, I would agree with that. It is used to create support for war in the Middle East, but that is a subversion of Christianity. That is Judeo-Christianity. That is the opposite of what Christianity is. That is preaching, well, basically worship for the Jews. And you got people there that believe that Jesus was a Jew, so therefore they are worshipping Jews. They see a verse in the Old Testament that says, I will bless those that bless thee and curse those that curse thee. And the modern day Zionist Christians believe that that's talking about the Jews. So they think if they bless the Jews, they will be blessed, and if they curse them, they will be cursed. Yet Jesus Christ himself says in the New Testament that the Jews are devils. So what are they saying there? Are they saying, well, we're supposed to bless these devils? Of course not. It's obviously talking about somebody else when it says, I will bless them that bless thee and curse those that curse thee. It's talking about the tribes of Israel. It's not talking about the Jews. He says he first discovered this revelation when noticing Jesus is the only fictional character in literature whose entire life story can be traced to other sources. Well, he's obviously not a fictional character, is he? Because there are eyewitness reports of him. There are eyewitness reports of him from the time that weren't challenged at the time. And these reports have only been challenged in the last 100 years. Nobody was challenging them 2,000 years ago. Nobody was saying, oh, the oldest guy didn't exist, because people were prepared to lay their lives on the line because they'd seen these miraculous occurrences. And they knew that this was the truth, so they were prepared to die. I mean, that's the reason why we have Christianity today, is because people, their faith and their strength, or the strength of their faith in what they believed to be true, was so much that they were prepared to be tortured to death. And we have all these marchers. And again, it was the Romans that were torturing these people. And yet this Joseph Atwill is claiming that it was the Romans that came up with Christianity, because it was of some kind of a benefit to them. If it was of some kind of a benefit to them, you would imagine that they would be supporting it, not marturing people. Obviously, they did eventually end up supporting it, but that was because Constantine the Great became emperor, and Constantine the Great was the son of, Helen the Great, the Empress Helena, and she was married to Emperor Maximian. And Helen, Empress Helen, she was the daughter of King Cole, who was a British king. And this was about 300 AD, something like that. And of course, Britain had been Christian since about 150 AD. So it had already been Christian for 150 years. So of course, the royal family were Christian. So of course, Constantine was brought up to be a Christian. He was taught to be a Christian. So as soon as he became emperor, he legalized Christianity and made his best buddy, St. George, the example for the youth to look up to, for the young manhood of Europe to look up to. And that's where you get the connection with St. George, which I've also covered elsewhere. But there was no support for Christianity up until then, which is the 4th century. And yet Christianity began in the 1st century. It says, by comparing the New Testament to the War of the Jews by Josephus, and I would call that War of the Judeans by Josephus, the sole surviving account of 1st century Judea, he found the parallels between the two are uncanny. Well, of course they would be, because the New Testament is fulfilling the prophecies of the Old Testament, and Josephus is writing about the events of the Old Testament and the history that led up to this big war that they had with Vespasian and Titus. Of course there are going to be parallels between them. It's talking about the same period in history and everything that led up to it. If there weren't parallels, then you would say, well, this is suspicious. This is suspicious because Josephus is talking about this and it says something different in the New Testament. Mr. Atwell says, what seems to have eluded many scholars is that the sequence of events and locations of Jesus' ministry are more or less the same as the sequence of events and locations of the military campaign of Titus Flavius, as described by Josephus. Well, of course, because it's happening in the same place, at the same, pretty much the same time, just 40 years previous. It says, this is clear evidence of a deliberately constructed pattern. Biography of Jesus is actually constructed tip to stern on prior stories, but especially on the biography of a Roman Caesar. The prior stories of the Old Testament are what proves the New Testament is the truth. It all the prophecies that are in that Old Testament were fulfilled by Christ. And Josephus is talking about the Old Testament and the things that back up the Old Testament, a lot of which is no longer surviving. The only evidence that we've actually got of a lot of these books that were around back then is in Josephus. I mean, that's one of the great values of the histories that Josephus wrote, was because he has quotes from other histories and it challenges some of these other histories, and we just don't have those books around today, which is a great shame. Now that's the article there, but if you go and have a look at his website, he's got a couple of bits on the website there, and he says, who was Jesus? Well, Jesus was certainly not a Jew. That's the whole point of the family tree that is at the beginning of, I think it's 3 of the Gospels, is to show that Jesus is not a Jew, is to show that Jesus is descended from David. David was not a Jew. David was from the tribe of Judah. He was purebred. He looked exactly the same as Europeans look today. Obviously, we can't call him European because he was living in the Middle East, and that's why I don't like to use the term European so much, because we've had white civilizations in the Middle East and in India and all over the world. We've had white civilizations, even in China, that have been started by white people. But they may not have originated in Europe before they went there. And Europe was the last place that we settled and built a civilization, obviously, because Europe is the last civilization that we've had. All these previous ones in the past, they fell due to miscegenation. So the whole point of the genealogies that are given in the New Testament is to show that Jesus is not a mixed-race bastard Canaanite like the people who were called the Jews were back then. And the term Jew is not a racial term. It's Judeos or whatever it was back then. It was a term for a citizen of Judea, and they didn't have to be descended from Judah. If they were descended from Judah, they would be a Judahite, and they would be proud of that fact. They were, you know, you can read in Josephus how proud the people that are actually descended from Judah are, and they mock Herod, and they mock these people that are mixed race Edomites. They mock their heritage because it's ignoble, because they are bastards. So the whole point of the genealogy in the New Testament is to tell us that Jesus was not a Jew. So that's who Jesus was. He was of the line of David. Next, he has, why were the Gospels written in Greek rather than Hebrew or Aramaic? Well, they were written in Greek because the disciples were all Benjaminites, and they were from Galilee of the Goyim, Galilee of the Gentiles, and it was an entirely Greek culture there, and Greek was the language that they used. That was the language of commerce, the same as English is the language of commerce today, and you get people that use that. I dare say they probably were well versed in Aramaic as well. I think one of the Gospels may have originally been written in Aramaic, and then you've got St. Paul, who wanted to, you know, they knew that they had to preach to the tribes of Israel, and the tribes of Israel weren't just in Judea. The tribes of Israel were all scattered abroad, as it says in St. James, and as it tells us in 3 Esdras, I believe it is, where it says that they went up through the north of the Euphrates and up through into the Caucasus and into Europe, basically. That's why the Gospels were written in Greek, because they weren't aimed at the Jews that were just in Judea. Finally, he says, why were the first Christian pope and saints all members of the Flavius Caesar family? Well, the first Christian pope was Linus, and Linus was the son of the British king Caractacus, and he was under house arrest in Rome as a guarantee that the Britons back in Britain wouldn't war against the Romans. And where he was held in under house arrest was the Palatium Britannicum, and it's also known as St. Pudentiana. And that was where St. Paul stayed, and Peter, I believe, when they were in Rome. They stayed at the British Palace. So it was Linus that was actually the first Christian pope. So I don't understand, or maybe not the first Christian pope. I mean, he was the first bishop of Rome. So if Joseph Atwell here is talking about the first bishop of Rome by saying the first Christian pope, then it was Linus. But perhaps he's talking about somebody different. Perhaps he's talking about when the word pope was first used, and I'm not sure when that was. And he's saying the first saints were all members of the Flavius Caesar family. Well, what, St. Joseph of Arimathea? He was part of the Flavius Caesar family, was he? St. Aristobulus? And you can look back at these early saints, and I don't believe they were members of the Flavius Caesar family. And in actual fact, if you look at the language of the New Testament, anyone who is an Israelite is a saint. Anyone who is of the 12 tribes that are scattered abroad is a saint. It was something that came about later on with the church, that they started beatifying people, particularly important people, and calling them saint as a measure of respect for them. So I'd question his last bit here, saying that the saints were all members of the Flavius Caesar family. Well, perhaps they were some of the first Christians. Flavius Josephus, I don't believe he was a Christian. He was a Pharisee for a while. He was an Essene for a while. And he briefly mentions Jesus and Christianity in very brief mention as he's discussing the history of the time. But he doesn't say that he was a Christian at all. And surely if they're going to say here, or Atwell is going to say here, that the Flavius Caesar family, who were his sponsors, who were Flavius Josephus's sponsors, surely that would mean that Flavius Josephus was a Christian. I believe Joseph Atwell thinks that the New Testament was written by Flavius Josephus, when quite clearly it wasn't. It's in a totally different style. Anyway, I hope that clears up any doubts that people have about the New Testament and challenges these people that do believe what Joseph Atwell has written. I mean, basically, it's a ludicrous assertion to make that Christianity was created by the Romans, because the Romans were the main persecutors of Christianity, and that was at the instigation of the Jews. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow, hopefully, with Mr. I once again. God bless, and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan at radioaryan.com.